to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. It's been about 6 months since Governor Ron DeSantis took over the governor's mansion. And the biggest shift from the Rick Scott administration clearly has been the focus on the environment. Last month in West Palm Beach, the new governor named the state's first ever chief science officer.
This idea, you know, of quote, climate change has become politicized. My environmental policy is just to try to do things that benefit Floridians.
Saying the phrase climate change, even in the way the governor represented it, a big leap from the former governor, Scott. The words were banned from state agencies under the Scott administration. On the campaign trail, DeSantis described himself as a Roosevelt conservationist. He's pushed for more funding for Everglades restoration. He's also created another new state job, a chief resiliency officer. And the governor just returned from Israel today on this Friday. He wanted to learn, among other things, how that country's water quality efforts can address perhaps red tide and blue-green algae blooms here in Florida. But how far is the governor taking climate change policy specifically? Is enough being done against the impacts of global warming, including the projected 1 to 3 feet of sea level rise by 2060? What are your thoughts on the new governor's environmental policies? 800-743-WLRN is our voice line. 800-743-9576. Maybe you didn't support the governor or vote for him, but what do you think about his environmental stance? You can send us a text as well, 786-786-7636. That's the text line. Just let us know where you're texting from, and your first name would be helpful as well. The text line again, 786-786-7636. This is a special Invading Sea edition of the South Florida Roundup. The Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, with reporting from WLRN, have all teamed up to address the threat of higher sea rise to South Florida. You can find all the coverage at the website, theinvadingsea.com. The opinion page editors of all three publications with us, Nancy Ankrum from our studios inside the Miami Herald in Doral, Rosemary O'Hara with the Sun Sentinel, and Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post with me here in our downtown Miami studios. All three of you, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Nancy, miss you guys.
Yeah, let's start with you, Nancy, out in Doral. What do you make of the governor's first 6 months and his follow-through on some of the environmental pledges he made on the campaign trail?
I think it's absolutely stunning, and it is a 180-degree turn from where we have been for the previous 8 years in terms of addressing this critical, critical issue from the leader of this state. I would give him a B+, A minus. His concern about the fragility of our waters, the fragility of our environment, and his backing it up with funding are extraordinary, one for this state and two for a Republican governor.
Rosemary, he asked for and received over $600 million in the state budget for water quality and restoration efforts in the Everglades.
Right. And his efforts have been focused on water quality, knowing that it sends the world a terrible message to see photographs of blue-green algae clogging our waterways, to see photos of a manatee that's died and fish dead on the beach. So it seems his first priority is dealing with, you know, Lake Okeechobee and Everglades, less so on sea level rise. So I think he's, and to the question you posed, Nancy, on how mm-hmm. would you grade him, I agree, he's a big surprise, and delighted to say that, and glad to hear he wants to help make Florida more resilient, where I wouldn't agree he's gone 180 degrees. I'll give him that much when he addresses the causes of climate change and pursues a clean energy plan and some goals for Florida.
Rick Christie, how about it? Your assessment of the governor's first 6 months and the focus on water quality as opposed to necessarily focused on climate change.
Yeah, I would probably give him closer to like a B or a B minus, but I'll agree with Nancy and Rosemary that it is stunning. The turn that we've had, given what we have been through the last 8 years. And I think that a lot of the accolades that the governor has gotten to this point have really have been like just because he's not Rick Scott, you know. And so, but he has said a lot of the right things. But some of the moves that he's made to this point just haven't really gotten me there. I see him more, rather than seeing him as an environmentalist, I look at him more as a political pragmatist from what he's done. In terms of water, for example, and what he's done with the toxic algae task force. Those are very good political moves to make. In terms of Everglades restoration, another very good political move to actually continue the momentum that Joe Negron and his colleagues had started a year before he got into office.
Joe Negron, former Senate
president. Yeah, the former Senate president. So I'm still not ready to see him as this Teddy Roosevelt Republican in terms of environmentalism yet. But again, his rhetoric is good. And if he keeps, and I guess there is still some hope that he's going to turn out to be the environmental governor that a lot of folks hope he will be.
Nancy?
Yes, you know, I think that Rick is right in terms of his political pragmatism, because he does get demerits for agreeing and signing on to those new toll roads in rural North Florida, which really put our water quality in direct danger from not just construction of these roads, but also the development that we know will follow.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with our Invading Sea panel of opinion page editors from South Florida's major newspaper publications, the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. Your phone calls, 800-743-9576. The first 6 months of Governor Ron DeSantis, have you been surprised by the environmental pragmatism that he has exhibited, certainly after the Rick Scott administration? Did you vote for him? Are you satisfied with the direction that you've seen? Maybe you didn't vote for him, but your thoughts on his environmental policy and budgets focused on water quality and Everglades restoration. The first chief science officer, the state looking for its first chief resiliency officer. Again, the number 800-743-9576, 800-743-9576. If you prefer text, we got you covered there. You can do that as well. That text line is 786-786-7636. Text us your first name, where you're texting from. The number again, 786-786-7636. Rosemary, is there a conflation that's happening here, and the governor is able to take advantage of it, perhaps, in the minds of most of the public, of talking about water quality, having policy on water quality, and being able to translate that into a broader environmental record, or building a broader environmental record and kind of climate change accolades?
Well, you know, it's to be seen. He's still, you know, he got in office in January. He had to have a budget done by the end of the month. And so he's learning as he's going. The money that went into sea level rise type projects in this budget was only $26 million for the whole state. To really turn the corner on this, Tallahassee needs to hear from every corner of Florida that this is essential. And it's really why we started this collaboration, the Invading Sea, to raise awareness and encourage people to let Tallahassee know. And I really think in the last year, with a large help from you too, Tom, is that we have raised awareness. And one of the key element places we've done that is in the business community. To make change happen in Tallahassee, to make him the environmental governor, to really focus on hardening South Florida and preserving a future here, it's going to take the business community's muscle. And I am delighted to see that the business community is rising in the last a year ago. That really was pretty quiet on their agenda. Yeah. Suddenly now they're really bringing it to the fore, and that's what it's going to take.
Rick Christie, I mean, maybe that's perhaps a part of the case here, right? I mean, the governor, Governor DeSantis as a candidate, really did make that connection explicitly between the environment, blue green algae and red tide, and the economy, tourism specifically, fishing, boating, and all those other kinds of industries, not only for tourists, but also residents, of course. But as that business community steps up and recognizes the threat of rising seas, not only on the coastline, but also inland. And you wind up having difficulty with sewer systems and drinking water quality. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the case. That's the inroad into the governor.
I agree. That was one of the reasons I kind of settled on calling him a pragmatist, because he drew a straight line between our environment and the economy. He didn't try to make this climate change argument. He just basically said, look, our economy is dependent upon tourism, which is dependent on our environment. Easy sell, you know, and which was a smart thing, I think, to do. I think the harder argument he's going to have to make, has to do with another big leg of our economy, which is development. And real estate development and growth. And to Nancy's point about him signing off on the toll roads, that kind of shows you how difficult that's going to be for him. Because the environmentalists, I don't know how many organizations made an argument for him not to do this, along with probably editorial boards too, not to do this. And he did it anyway because, well, this is an economic argument. And so that's why I said it's going to be interesting to see how he does going forward in terms of his positions on the environment. Tourism is an economic argument, but so is real estate development and growth, which is, you know, where a lot of people see, you know, what drives Florida.
Absolutely. Two of the traditional legs of Florida, yes. The other one being agriculture, which is also threatened, certainly,
yes,
by climate change and rising seas as well. Your phone calls, 800-743-9576. The opinion page editors of the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, along with us here on the South Florida Roundup, our Invading Sea group is with us and ready to hear from you on the politics and the pragmatism of environmentalism here in Florida. We'll start in Miami, where Nicholas is on line four. Nicholas, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say I voted for Ron DeSantis, and I'm very surprised with how amazing he's doing on the environment. I'm just calling to sing his praises. It's absolutely fantastic. I was really, really didn't expect him to be this good with it.
What satisfies you most, Nicholas, as a voter? I mean, what gives you kind of the most surprise and the most satisfaction with what you've seen out of the governor so far in the environment?
Well, he really did keep his promises on water quality. Now, I haven't been able to, like, really, really focus in and, like, keep up to date on it because of my work and whatnot. But I had a good feeling about him the moment where he essentially condemned the Rick Scott administration for going through the process with, I believe it was some group, basically, I can't remember the exact thing, but I know he condemned the Rick Scott proceeding when they shouldn't have.
Gotcha. Nicholas, thanks for your voice. We appreciate it. There's a DeSantis voter who's satisfied with what's happening on the environment. Martin in Fort Lauderdale on line two. Go ahead, Martin. You're on the radio.
Hey there. I'm a card-carrying Republican, but I tend to differ with the Republican Party line with respect to environmental change, and I'm really happy to see Governor DeSantis is also taking some steps to more or less depart from, you know, the traditional Republican line, which unfortunately tends to be fueled by a lot of special interests. I'm really glad to see, especially, you know, given that Florida's environment and especially our water quality is key to us remaining a vacation hotspot in our country and really in the world. I'm glad to see Governor DeSantis, picking up on that and really doing something about it, or trying to do something about it.
Yeah,
I would agree that there's some, political pragmatism to that. But then again, if you look at what Governor Scott did, you know, from my perspective, I think DeSantis is standing up to the Republican Party and basically having the guts to take a departure from the party line.
Martin, that's what I wanted to ask you about. Is you describe yourself as a card-carrying member of the Republican Party, and you're happy to see Governor DeSantis embrace environmentalism. So what's your message to the broader party, as you're even putting voice a little bit to kind of that schism between traditional party tenets and the environmental policies that you're seeing out of the new governor?
There are so many people who are Republicans that don't agree with a lot of what we're hearing from the Republican Party. I think to a large extent, they've lost touch with their constituents. I think the same exact thing is true of the Democratic Party. I think, you know, both parties have really lost that's gone too far right. We've got a left that's gone too far left. Mm. We need more centrists, which I think, based on this glimmer of hope that we're seeing with DeSantis, I'm hoping there's more DeSantis-type politicians, you know, running for office. And, and it'd be nice if we saw someone, you know, in the presidential run, somebody who's more of a centrist rather than the extreme right or extreme left that we're seeing now in candidates.
Martin, we appreciate a Republican from Broward County there joining us on public radio. How about that? Same phone number for everybody, regardless of the color of your voter registration card, so to speak. 800-743-9576. Rosemary?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that the conversation about climate change among Republicans in Florida is has taken a turn, and it's worth calling out. It's not so much about, is it real anymore? Is the science real anymore? It's about, what is it going to, how are we going to deal with this enormous problem?
Even Senator Scott has now uttered the phrase,
exactly.
Climate
yeah.
change, right,
yeah.
Nancy?
Right. You know, I would like to add, it really is a window onto the political calculus of this and so many other issues where, in general, I think Martin's right, legislators, lawmakers play follow the leader. And for the 8 years that we had a governor that did not want to utter the words climate change, no one else did in the legislature from his party, or few people did or pushed back. And now that the scales have fallen from their eyes because they have a leader who is willing to charge forward with this, where I suspect for the past 8 years, those Republicans that really did believe that climate change is real, that sea level rise is a threat to their constituents, they were rendered mum or rendered themselves mum.
Mm-hmm. Let me bring in Jennifer Hirado. She is the resiliency chief in Broward County. Jennifer, welcome back to WLRN. I'm going to take politics out of this for a moment because I'm guessing you'd prefer not to talk about the politics of it. But in your position as the point person on resiliency and climate resiliency specifically in Broward County, have you experienced a sea change of difference or any type of difference in dealing with the DeSantis administration compared to the work that you were doing in Broward County under the Scott administration?
Well, thanks for the opportunity to participate in the conversation. I want to acknowledge that even in the last year or so of the Scott administration, we were seeing a lot of positive improvements in the way of a resilience discussion within the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. So there had already been established a coastal resilience program and project manager and some granting opportunities. So we were starting to see some investments and support for local governments looking to advance their own resilience planning. I think with the DeSantis administration, of course, we've seen great effort to expand the reach of those programs with enhanced funding. We have some, promise of, or, at least prospective, positive prospects for some additional collaborations. What I would like to see personally, and I think that there's some positive indication that might be on the horizon, but we really need to see our water management districts engage at a much higher level in supporting local governments and their water resources planning initiatives with an eye on sea level rise, impacts on water supply, more severe drought, water quality treatment and protections, and enhanced distribution of funds to local governments to be dealing with, not necessarily through the water management districts, but through the state for drainage and stormwater improvements. So I think that there's still some really great opportunity for demonstrated support in those areas, but I think, not everything happens overnight, and the leadership and support coming through DEP and the investments in water quality protections and particular concerns for our reefs, I think is quite promising, and we look forward to aiding the governor and his staff that he's bringing on board as we, work to think about ways in which we can best work together to accelerate the benefits of those investments.
Dr. Hirado, thank you for your perspective. It's an important one. Rick Christie, she mentioned an agency that we hadn't talked about yet, and that's the South Florida Water Management District, a key piece of resiliency and climate change mitigation and adaptation, and certainly addressing sea level rise, mm-hmm. because it helps keep the water where we'd like it to be, as opposed to where it traditionally, historically has gone over the centuries here in South Florida. But the governor has remade the South Florida Water Management District and the board.
Yeah, that was a kind of a soap opera to get things started at the very beginning when he had to, as you said, ask the entire board to resign and all of that stuff. I think that we are seeing a good deal of positive movement from the Water Management District in terms of water quality, particularly when it comes to the Everglades restoration stuff and all of that. There, what we have seen much less of is any discussion about resilience and the coast and the coastal areas and everything. And as Jennifer said, we really need to see more of that going forward. Particularly in Palm Beach County, where our coastal cities now are talking a great deal more about it. Boca Raton, Delray Beach, Ocean Ridge, Boynton Beach. These guys are getting together and talking and actually looking and saying, hey, boy, we really need to do something about this.
It's striking if you have a beach or ocean in your name that you hadn't been thinking about it yet. But
absolutely,
here we are.
Absolutely. But that's a good thing. We have to call that a good thing. And it's positive that they're moving forward. And it would be very good to see the Water Management District take a more active role in helping these guys.
Let me bring in another caller here, Ann in Fort Lauderdale. Thanks for calling into the roundup, Ann. You're on the radio.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah, I'm a Republican from Broward County. I noticed in every debate, Ron DeSantis was the first one to bring up the environment. I did vote for him. I'm really, really happy with him. And I think one of the main things I'm happiest about is he's a Republican who's really working hard for the environment. And that delineation that I think happened relatively recently in the Republican Party, setting the environment against the economy, the ecology against the economy, is pretty new. That's pretty new. Republicans were the first conservationists, and they were the ones under Nixon. Our four main environmental laws came in. So we need to remember that, both Democrats, especially Democrats.
Yeah, the Republicans will point to Teddy Roosevelt, of course, and national parks, and then the creation of the EPA, especially back in the Nixon administration.
Well, it was the EPA, it was the Clean Air Act, it was the Clean Water Act, and it was the Marine Mammal Act. Our four core environmental laws came in under Nixon. So I agree with the previous caller that we have become super extreme. I have many, many very far left friends that can't think of one positive thing to say about the Republican Party. Whereas I can think of a lot of positive things to say about the Democratic Party.
I appreciate that, Ann. In regards to the environment and Governor DeSantis, you mentioned how you are thrilled with the governor and his environmental policies. You work in the environment, what you told our phone producer. Where would you like to see the governor go and the Florida Republicans go that still remain in the majority in the Florida House and Senate?
Well, we've discussed water quality and we've discussed the environment. I'm an eco-tour guide in the Everglades, so that's very near and dear to my heart. I also volunteer with sea turtles, and so green tide and the red tide and the green algae was catastrophic. And so the bridges raising the Tamiami Trail are a very big part of the solution. It's certainly not the whole solution. The Everglades is super messed up, but it's a big part of the solution.
Yeah, those are things that, I'm sorry to interrupt, we're just short a little bit on time, Ann, but would you like to see the governor go next?
I would really like to see development control. I would like to see green space, not parks, but native areas set aside. This is the time, I mean, we're way past the time, but we need to set aside big chunks of different types of ecosystems that will be protected. For wildlife, for bird migration, for native species, for native plants. We're in the East Coast Bird Flyway. Yeah. We need to have a green belt.
Yeah, got it.
Birds can land and refuel. So I would like to see him to really not speed up development and not speed up the construction of roads.
All right.
But realize his kids and his grandkids are not going to have any green space left if we don't do it now.
And the eco guide out in the Everglades there, sunscreen and bug spray. I was out in that area over this last weekend, and I'm still itching my calves with all the mosquito bites. Rosemary, real quick.
I just wanted to add that there's a new water management board. One of the big challenges for Governor DeSantis, I think, is whether he is going to allow them. Governor Scott forced them to cut taxes, to not let the revenue rise as property values increased. So a big question right there, our flood control system is 50 to 70 years old. Big fixes are needed in it. When we talk about sea level rise, we're talking billions and billions of dollars. We need to put money into these fixes. Will Governor DeSantis allow the Water Management Board to allow revenues to rise as property values rise? I think that's going to be one of his first big tests of leadership on this.
Could be enormously challenged because on the education side, as we know, the Florida legislature has continued to not allow local school districts to take advantage of higher property values and to allow the millage rate to remain the same and allow that revenue to increase as property values have increased for local schools. All right, we've got to take a quick break. Lots more to come with our Invading Sea panel here on the South Florida Roundup. Miami, the city, county, and beach unveil a new resiliency report this week. There's not a whole lot new in there, though, about climate resiliency. That's coming up on the South Florida Roundup after this. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening and supporting public radio. South Florida got another report on resiliency this week. This report came from Miami-Dade County, the City of Miami, and Miami Beach. It was developed in partnership with the Rockefeller Foundation. The report aims to address climate change threats like heat and rising seas. But the final plan is much broader. It includes a host of other challenges facing Miami, like affordable housing and opioid addiction. Jane Gilbert is the City of Miami's Chief Resilience Officer. Here's what she told WLRN about the report's broader reach.
One of the critical things to address to build urban resilience is to look at the most chronic stresses facing a community, because that weakens the fabric. If we have a hurricane and our homeless population that is not taken care of, we're going to have far more threats to human lives if we don't have good systems in place.
Now, the plan does not offer many new ideas. Instead, it focuses on existing projects that were underway before the report began taking shape. Have you seen this report? Maybe you participated in one of the town halls over the past couple of years that informed the broader approach to resiliency in Miami, Miami-Dade, and Miami Beach. 800-743-WLRN, that's our voice line, 800-743-9576. You could also send us a text at 786-786-7636. Also, include your name, where you're texting from, on that text line again, 786-786-7636. The editorial boards of the three major newspapers here in South Florida, the Miami Herald, Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, supported by reporting from us here at WLRN, have all teamed up to confront the threat of higher seas. You can find all the coverage online at theinvadingsea.com. Now, what does all this mean for South Florida? Well, this is Marcia in Sunrise. Here's how climate change is influencing where she and her family live.
When you think about real estate as an asset to be passed down to your kids and possibly your kids' kids, the thought of climate change has definitely impacted how we see real estate in South Florida. My husband and I currently own what we believed would be our starter home. He really wants to sell and purchase a bigger home locally. However, with the threat of climate change and rising sea levels, I convinced him that it doesn't make sense to invest more money in Florida real estate. We are now currently considering buying our dream home in Atlanta.
Marcia and her family may be moving away from South Florida. Jill, her husband, and their two kids recently moved to the area. They rent a home now in Boynton Beach, and they're looking for a home in a new development.
We're very concerned about sea level rise and climate change, and it's unclear to us how these new developments have incorporated this reality of sea level rise into their development strategy. So it's really unclear to us how long our investment will last, and at what point will we not be able to resell the home, or when will it depreciate in value because of more frequent flooding and sea level rise, which is inevitable, and it's not that far off in our time horizon.
Questions about the quality of a roof, your water heater, the age of the air conditioner, now adding in questions about climate change and climate resiliency for home buyers. Elizabeth grew up in Miami. She lived in New York City for the past 9 years. She moved back mostly because she says she wanted to be able to buy a home, something she couldn't afford to do in New York. So now she's been looking for homes in Miami Shores and El Portal.
A lot of the houses that I liked were located in areas that are heavily flooded, either during sunny day flooding or during storms. And ultimately, I decided that that wasn't a risk that I wanted to take, especially since purchasing a home was a long-term commitment to me. What was also surprising was how little this is discussed amongst the real estate agents and homeowners. And it seems like everyone's kind of, you know, ignoring the issue when this is something that's going to be directly affecting the market in a few years, if not now.
So has climate change affected how you're thinking about real estate here in South Florida, if you're a renter or an owner for that matter? Let us know, 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN is the phone number. We are with our panel of the Evading Sea opinion page editors from the South Florida major newspapers, Nancy Ankrum with our partner, the Miami Herald, Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel, and Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post. Nancy, lot to kind of dig into here, but just overall, we get another resiliency report here in South Florida this week. And here we just heard from three residents, some of whom own homes, some of whom are looking to buy homes, but clearly are concerned about climate change. Is this getting the attention that that it deserves at the highest level, but also at all levels throughout our region?
Increasingly, it is. The last audio clip that you played of a young woman who was looking in the northeast Miami-Dade area is correct. It is not getting, climate change and sea level rise is not getting the attention that it needs from the municipalities, the small municipalities. We always focus on the county. We always focus on Miami. But those small cities up and down the coast need to play a role. The people who are paying attention are the homeowners who have to live with this. And they are moving. They are moving inland. They are moving west. They are moving out of South Florida.
One of the differences that those behind the Greater Miami Resiliency Plan that was released this week will point to is that the 12 of the 34 municipalities in Dade County have signed on to it, including El Portal, a very small community, as you mentioned, Nancy, in northeast Florida. North Miami Beach has signed on to this, South Miami as well. Does that give you encouragement that this is beginning to, pun intended, kind of filter down to that lowest or the smallest government level, community, municipal level?
Indeed it does. I mean, you know, denial and indifference are very hard to eradicate. It's an incremental battle, as we've seen, I think, and it will continue. I think that that homeowners, and I do hope that real estate agents will make that clear. Once again, as we have seen with DeSantis, business is business. The economy is everything.
You know, I think local communities are signing on. We saw that with the Southeast Florida Climate Compact. There's general agreement that we get the problem. What we need, though, what everybody is really calling for is a plan. So what are we going to do? Where are we going to start? And to see that this 305 resiliency plan has everything but the kitchen sink in it, if you have so many priorities to deal with homelessness and opioid and mental health, you have no priorities. What is the priority that these communities need to rally behind in order to make South Florida hardened and keep the water from overflowing the banks? I respect the people who put it all together. It sounds like there were too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do think that throwing in some of the other urban challenges was Rockefeller's way of saying you cannot ignore all of these issues and expect any climate change plan to work. Already we see what? The displacement in Miami. We see the displacement of low-income homeowners where? Where can they go for the money that they're getting for their homes? That does need to be a concern. When the next hurricane blows through, I know that we will write in the editorial, will the people in the inner city also be apprised and prepared and so on and so forth? Yeah. I do think that Rockefeller was trying a little backdoor way of saying they're people who are going to be affected here, and the people are not all affluent homeowners.
And in all fairness, the Rockefeller Foundation has supported these kinds of reports in other large municipal areas that have also been broad in scope and not just focused on the climate resiliency, for instance. But that has been, frankly, that critical coverage, Rick Christie, that, yes, you can't certainly separate one problem for the next, but to focus on climate resiliency being such a bedrock component of the future sustainability of the economy, to address affordable housing, to address public health, to address the income gap, is a cornerstone that perhaps deserves a bit of a moonshot at this point in South Florida.
Yeah, I think so. I think also that they're for people to kind of get it, I guess, and understand what we're trying to say in terms of the importance of this, that there has to be, they have to be able to make a connection. And in terms of, okay, I understand this is that climate change is happening, and it's not happening in a good way, and that we're having a big effect on it, the seas are rising, but you still need to make that connection to them. And I was checking something that I had read a couple of days ago, that there's been a new study. Just came out on May 20th, no scientific studies saying that they may have been too conservative in terms of sea level rise now, that the ice sheets are might melting faster than they thought, and that they now have to do new models again. So, just from the time that we started trying to bang this drum here and talk and get people thinking about the sea level rise threat here, it's even worse than when we first started talking about it.
It'll provide another communication challenge for the scientific community, however, for those voices that want to either reject climate change science outright or to point to the modeling in science and say, the trouble with predictions is that they're about the future.
Yeah. Can I say that it is going to be a huge challenge to, and I'm going back to one of my first points was, huge challenge to get the real estate development growth industry in Florida to really do what they need to do here, because that is how they make money, and that is going to be a big thing that if DeSantis is really going to make a big difference here, that's where he really needs to move things.
Let me bring ahead, Nancy.
I'm sorry. And it's not only how the development community makes money, it's how politicians stay in office.
Follow the dollars. Enrique in Sunny Isles is online too. Enrique, thanks for holding on. You're on the radio.
You're welcome. My pleasure to have on this program. I've been a realtor for the last 16 years, so and in Sunny Isles, Aventura, Normandy Beach, which is all a flood zone, if you may. So I live on the water, so I know the kind of problem that we're. I see it every single day. Our water line every day going higher and higher. And my comment was really listening to you every single day and listening to the last half an hour, what I saw people calling and saying that there was a disconnect on the politicians, too extreme on the right, too extreme on the left. I think that's just a reflection of what we see on the people. I see a lot of people that they just they want to follow their flag, or if they're Republicans, they just blind their eyesight and they go for whatever their party is saying. The same thing on the Democratic side. I think we really have to look to the issues. In my opinion, I don't really think that our government is doing anything of what we want. We've been voting election after election that we want to see changes on the environment, that we want to see a better and more serious approach towards the environment in general. And you know,
Enrique, let me ask you. I mean, Enrique, let me ask you. Certainly, that would be the case in 2014 with what was then called Amendment 4, which had a dedicated revenue source for land conservation and preservation. Is that what you're referring to specifically?
That's one of the things. Yeah, absolutely. I think there's many other things, you know, that we should be approaching nowadays. I think we should, you know, being on a geographic location that we are, we should be the example to the world of what kind of attitude and what kind of legislation we have towards the environment.
Gotcha.
You know, to have our government, you know, people are saying that we love DeSantis for his position and everything. The fact that he vetoed the ban on plastic, for me, is a travesty to the environment. You know, even though yesterday in your program,
Let me just try to step in here, Enrique. What the governor did, as I understand, and please, Rosemary, Rick, or Nancy, correct me if I'm wrong, the governor vetoed a bill that would not have allowed a community like Sunny Isles to have its own plastic ban. So in other words, what the governor did was allow Sunny Isles to have its own plastic ban. Plastic straws, should it decide to do that. So things get a little bit complicated with double negatives. It's a ban not to do something and those kinds of things. But Enrique, I appreciate your important thoughts there from Sunny Isles. Let me bring to our program Jose Javier Rodriguez, a Democratic state senator from Miami-Dade County, joining us on the Florida Roundup. Senator Rodriguez, nice to have you back on WLRN. Thanks for your time today.
No, absolutely. Thank you for covering the important topic.
You just heard from Enrique, not one of your constituents up in Sunny Isles, but you know, wants politicians to get more active on the issue. You just sat through the session with Governor DeSantis. What's your grade on the governor and the environment?
Well, I didn't sit through the session. I worked very hard. And as you know, I wear rain boots during the legislative session, the 60 days. It's ridiculous. I'm at the Capitol in a suit, but I'm wearing large rain boots with the hashtag #ActOnClimateFL because, you know, Democrat or Republican, we all need to make sure that acting on climate is a priority. So I would say that there is progress both at, you know, the governor's level and the legislature.
So what would you point to on the legislative side for progress?
So really, primarily, you know, a legislation that I filed this year, Senate Bill 78, if passed, would require sea level rise planning for publicly funded construction projects in the coastal zone. And the reason why I filed that, I've been working with a number of stakeholders, a broad coalition, is that we're looking for something transformative that would really move the needle on climate. Two Senate committees unanimously approved the bill, and honestly, the best debate in favor of it was from some of my Republican colleagues, including those in the central part of the state that don't have a coastal district. There's been progress primarily because it's no longer perceived as a primarily environmental issue. It's an economic issue, and we really have, you know, both the strength of the coalition showing this not a partisan issue. People are okay talking about it. People are okay with government acting, specifically state government. But also, the people are understanding the stakes are high. We need to act now.
But, Senator, it's Rosemary O'Hara.
Yeah.
What about the Florida House? There was no movement in the Florida House. So when we talk about the Florida legislature and are we seeing movement on climate change, how would you grade the institution as a whole?
Well, listen, we're going from an F to a D minus, right? with very few exceptions, right, there's not really a debate on science anymore. In my short legislative career, we went from a place where if you raised climate in committee, it would immediately turn into something that, you know, would be entertaining to report on, right, which is a big discussion and debate about that. That doesn't happen anymore, right? We have open discussions with cabinet-level officials about climate, about all the aspects of climate. So that is progress. It's absolutely true that the most progress that we need in all of state government is in the House of Representatives. But I would include that, right? I mean, I've had so many discussions with colleagues in leadership on the Republican side about the climate-related issues. And again, there are debates about it. but they're not debates primarily on the science. They're debates about fiscal policy.
Senator Rodriguez, the local community that you represent, the three levels of government, the city of Miami, the city of Miami Beach, and the county in Miami-Dade County released that Resilient 305 report this week. It was very broad in scope, as we've talked about. It included not only climate resiliency, but also public health care, the opioid crisis, affordable housing, all these other types of challenges, certainly, that are present in our community, no doubt about it. But there also was a lack of really new ideas. There was a resuscitation of projects that have been underway, some of which have been underway for some time and are certainly positive in the making. But there wasn't a moonshot in there. Should there have been one? Should this community be looking for a Marshall Plan of sorts for specifically sea level rise and more generally climate?
So 2 points related to that. I commend Miami Beach, Miami-Dade County, City of Miami, for their work. The leadership on climate policy in Florida for a very long time has come from local governments. There's been a glaring lack of any real activity at the state level, again, until the glimmers of hope this year. In fact, at different points during the Scott administration, there was actually hostility. That's very much changed under Governor DeSantis. But, the other point is, again, because they've been acting on it for so long and local governments only have so much that they can do, really what they can do is coordinate their efforts and try to get as much funding from the feds, state government, and from private sources as they possibly can. So if there's no new ideas, it's frankly because they've been at this quite a while and they probably had a good idea what they need to do, where the ideas need to come from. And as you say, a Marshall Plan is the state. And the bill that I filed and where I feel like we're moving the conversation is at a planning level, right, to use our existing resources with planning and climate effects in mind. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that we get there. But frankly, my feeling is we're way behind. We still have plenty of time for us to take action and meaningful action. But when we should have been, at full speed in a race, it feels like we're starting to crawl as when it comes to state government. So it's that should be where we end up. But there's so many things we need to have in place already. Like 10 years ago, we should have started, working climate into our planning. But that's where the conversation is right now. So I'm optimistic because it's baby steps. We need to be, making leaps and bounds. We need to already be there. But baby steps at least are welcome. And so the quick answer is, if local governments aren't coming up with anything new this particular week, there's probably good reasons for it. Where the real movement needs to happen is at state government.
Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez, state senator from District 37, Democrat, representing parts of Miami-Dade County. Senator, great to have you on the program. Thanks for your insights.
Thank you.
We are continuing talking about rising seas and the invading sea with our group of editorialists here, editorial editors, Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post, Nancy Ankrum with the Miami Herald, Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Quick phone call here. David in Miami has been very, very patient, bringing up a new aspect here that we haven't really mentioned. David, thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Oh, my pleasure. Great to follow Senator Rodriguez. My question is about the Cantor Real Estate being given this right to drill for oil or explore for oil in the Everglades. Seems like talk about resiliency. If we start to do that, that threatens all of us, if I'm not mistaken.
Gotcha. David, great question. This is in Broward County, Rosemary, where a private landowner essentially has secured a permit to have a series of exploratory drills looking for petroleum, looking for oil underneath the eastern Everglades.
Right. And one of the big challenges that they've got to deal with is, what do you do with the water, the sludgy water that is a byproduct of this? So there still are permits that it needs to get. The state DEP has basically thrown up its hands, though, because of how this permit was or the approvals were granted mm-hmm. under the Scott administration. Broward County certainly plans to challenge any drilling and any change in its comprehensive plans to stand in the way of this. And just speaking of comprehensive plan, you know, one of the moonshot ideas I think we got to think of, and it's to Rick's point about growth and development. We look at growth. We're expecting 6 million more people down here in the next 40 years. Really? Where are we going to put them? And then when we think about, we're going to have to find land that will hold water.
Yep.
And we right now deal with land use decisions plot by plot. There's no big thinking about this. The state under the former governor got rid of the Department of Community Affairs that used to do these land use plans and oversee them. We've got to think in bigger ways. If we want all these people to come, and we know all this water is coming too, how is this jigsaw puzzle going to fit together?
You know, it's interesting, Rosemary, you know, speaks hypothetically, if we want all these people to come, someone has to say, step up and say, maybe we don't want all of these people to come.
And maybe some of the places where we have people already, we don't want them there longer term. These are very difficult conversations,
exactly.
No doubt, to have. Nancy Ankrum, the editorial page editor with our partner, the Miami Herald. Rosemary O'Hara holds that down at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Rick Christie is the one responsible for the editorial pages of the Palm Beach Post. All three of you, always great to have you on. Thanks so much for sharing
your thoughts.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is our Invading Sea program here on the South Florida Roundup. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Teresa Frontado is our digital director. Our news director is Taryn Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. The director of radio operations is Peter Meritz. The director of radio programming and our technical supervisor for this program is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening, and texting and supporting public radio. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, the Bee Specialist.